From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Texas versus California. The rivalry heats up, but which state is winning? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. California is restricting publicly funded travel for four more states because of recent laws that California leaders view as discriminatory against gay and transgender people. In total, California now bans most state-funded travel to eight states, now including Texas. Texas Governor Greg Abbott this month signed a law that allows child welfare providers to deny adoption because of sincerely held religious beliefs, a provision that critics interpreted as permitting adoption agencies to deny services to same-sex married couples. The reaction from many in Texas has been sort of, so what? This is a California stunt, and Texas doesn't need to be messed with. It's unlikely that this is going to motivate state leaders to change public policy. But Jessica Shortall, the managing director of Texas Competes, says this travel ban and others which are likely to follow are going to have an impact on the state's tourism economy.
We know that there are already some economic impacts happening in Texas because of this, and we know that North Carolina suffered some direct economic impacts from a similar travel ban. So probably the biggest gray area is sports. In Kansas, for example, California has the same prohibition in place for Kansas and has for quite some time based on a Kansas law there related to campus student groups being able to discriminate on membership on religious grounds. So in Kansas, for example, a scheduled Jayhawks, I believe, UCLA game, I think I'm getting that right, was canceled because the coaches and student athletes were prohibited from traveling on state funds from University of California and Cal State teams. So that's something that we know has had at least one sporting impact. It seems so far in the sporting space that postseason play, meaning tournaments, are exempt. We have some evidence of California state university teams being allowed to travel to prohibited states on state funds to participate in postseason play. So on the sporting front, it seems like it's more greater risk is in home and home and non-conference play between any Texas teams and teams that fall under the state university system. The other area that seems to be under greater risk is conventions and meetings. We saw in North Carolina at least one conference that was directly impacted after California placed North Carolina on its travel prohibition. That was a tobacco control research conference that was supposed to be held in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. It had to be moved to St. Louis, Missouri, because several of the attendees were California academics who could not travel to the state of North Carolina. So we're watching carefully to see impacts that might happen in Texas in a similar way.
This travel ban went into effect even before Texas has passed the so-called bathroom bill, which requires people to use the bathroom of their birth gender. And some people see that as state-supported discrimination towards transgender folks. So if that goes into effect, that becomes law, which is on the agenda for the special session. Basically, will there be more of this type of activity, or has California already shot that gun?
Yeah, California has done what it can do under the law in place there. The risk from travel prohibitions, then we start to look at and be wary of other states and other cities. So in North Carolina, after their HB2 law was passed, which is essentially a bathroom bill targeting transgender people, similar to what we're hearing talked about here in Texas, California wasn't the only entity to ban official travel to the state. We saw several other states, including Minnesota, Washington State, Connecticut, and Vermont, also enact official travel prohibitions to the state of North Carolina. And then a whole slew of cities did the same thing in North Carolina. So it is possible that we will see others follow suit in the wake of a bathroom law in Texas.
Any idea what the economic impact of this California action could have?
I don't have a number on that at the moment. I mean, we're seeing individual conferences and meetings, organizers expressing concern and saying that they have speakers and attendees who will not be able to attend. And so they're thinking about pulling out. But we don't yet have, I don't think we'll know for a very long time what that final number is. The other issue is that there's a silent loss. So one, there conference cancellations and sporting event cancellations are one thing. It's a big number that can be publicly reported. What meeting planners tell us happens over time, though, is that entities that host big conventions, for example, simply don't approach places like Texas because they know that some of their attendees will not be able to travel to the state to attend the conference. So they look for places where it's going to be less of a hassle, where there's less risk that they'll have to deal with upset attendees and speakers or folks who simply can't come to the state. So that's kind of a slower bleed that I think could have an impact on the Texas tourism industry long term, which is the second largest industry in Texas.
Some people say the community that these laws impact is so small that people are blowing it out of proportion. When you look at a convention and you say it's a convention of geologists or a convention of whatever, and they're going to say, well, we may or may not have people in our community who could be feel that they would be discriminated if they came to Texas because of this bathroom bill. We're just not even going to plan it to come to Texas just to avoid the headache. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, we hear a lot of that. But another thing we hear is folks who are just unwilling to associate their brand with something that's perceived as state-sponsored discrimination. So we hear from a lot of conference planners and organizers that say it doesn't matter how small the population is. Folks that say to me, I didn't think that the size of the population was a litmus test when you talk about human rights and treating everybody equally. And we can't afford to associate our brand with that kind of discrimination. So regardless of whether the conference organizer thinks that they have transgender or gender nonconforming people as attendees, it's not something that they're willing to associate their name with if they can help it. That's something that we hear quite a bit.
I've seen some questions online from people or accusations that California's ban on travel to Texas is hypocrisy because many people in California don't like the travel ban that the Trump administration has put on people of the Muslim faith coming from certain countries.
Oh, well, those aren't the same thing at all. We talk a lot in Texas about our love, and I'm right there with everyone about our love of free markets. This is an entity with an enormous amount of spending power choosing where it wants to spend its money. So that is the state of California operating in a free market and making choice among competitors that might host conferences and other events that their employees want to travel to. So that to me seems like a free market and choice operating well. I think the only thing those two things have in common is that they both have the words travel ban in them. But in the case of the state of California, it is the state saying we will not be able to use taxpayer dollars to sanction employee travel. They're certainly not banning those employees from traveling to Texas in their own capacity, nor are they banning or prohibiting any average Californians from traveling to Texas in their own capacity, which many people will, and I hope they do keep doing that. They're saying that taxpayer dollars will not be used, and that was a law passed by the General Assembly of California.
Texas lawmakers passed these laws. Did they know that this was a probable outcome? It would hurt the Texas economy.
Gosh, I couldn't possibly say. It certainly isn't a secret that this law exists in California and that it's an open-ended law, meaning that the attorney general there can add states to it as that office determines additional states to have crossed the line of into passing legislation that discriminates against LGBT people. But I couldn't possibly say whether that was known by every lawmaker in Austin.
Well, it should have been known. I mean, it's their job to know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think all of our leaders ought to keep the economic health of the state in mind. I think sometimes we can forget that, think of these as just big numbers, but every single one of those numbers translates into, when you have a convention lost, that is small businesses. That's the local audiovisual folks that mic up the keynote speaker and that run the lights and sound that are contracted when a big convention comes to town. And it's the band that plays at the reception and the caterer and the florist and the photographer, all the folks that are brought in that depend on tourism for their livelihood. It's the, when hotel rooms sit empty, that's fewer hours for the staff that cleans the hotel room. So all of this has actual impact on Texas families. And I think that that can sometimes get lost in those big numbers. So sure, I would hope that our leaders would think about those people.
Jessica Shortall is the managing director of Texas Competes, which advocates for an LGBTQ business-friendly environment in Texas. In the rivalry between Texas and California, statistics come into play quite frequently to prove the point, which state is winning the war of the best economy. A few years ago, Texas could brag about its miracle economy and say that proves that laissez-faire attitudes are good for jobs. But now, things have changed. The trend has reversed, and the Golden State is once again golden. Recently, the public finance site Wallet Hub ranked California as the second best economy in the nation after Washington State. But the cost of living in California is much higher than Texas, as is the cost of real estate. And people are moving from California and they're coming to Texas. Paul Chabot says people are voting with their feet for Texas. Chabot is a twice failed Republican candidate for Congress in California. He moved to Texas and started the company Conservative Move, which is helping right-wingers leave the left coast for Texas.
We are really looking to concentrate, not just in California, but in many areas of the country where conservatives are unhappy. They have seen a change in their region, whether it's a decline in schools, a rise in crime, low-paying jobs, high taxes, etc., and really reaching out to those families to encourage them to look at other areas of the country where they would probably be more happy.
So when you say, is this really a conservative thing? You're looking for recruiting conservatives to come to Texas, or is this an economic opportunity thing?
I think it's really all of the above. Not only are we focused on helping families move here to North Texas, and I will say we've been around now just about 3 weeks, about a thousand families have signed up from about 40 different states. Most of those, about 75%, are from California. However, Texas is just, I think, the start. There are a number of other states that we're looking at and expanding to include Arizona, to include North Dakota, South Dakota, Idaho, Utah, Oklahoma, Kansas, a number of states where there are already a strong contingency of conservatives or a conservative legislature, if you will, where folks can feel like they can just live a better life.
Do you see this impacting at a level that demographics will reflect what's going on here?
I would think long term, I hope that it does. I mean, obviously, this conservative move is it's a for-profit. It's a business model where entrepreneurs bringing something forward that we think meets a unique niche. However, what I hope from it happens, well, not just now, but for the years to come, is that people have a broader conversation about what makes up a great community. What kind of community do people want to see their children raised in? You know, my wife and I, I'm 43. We were born and raised in California. We have four young kids, ages 9, 8, 7, and 4. When I was in California in school in the 70s, we had some of the best schools. We had some of the lowest crime, some of the best jobs. It was a place to go. Now it's a place to escape. It has one of the highest welfare concentrations. Schools are at the bottom percentile. And this is largely because of, I won't say Democrats, but the far left-leaning edge, the progressives in California that now control the governorship through the state house and have brought forward very radical legislation that has directly impacted schools, community, and quality of life for families like ours.
What about Prop 13? Did that have any effect on that?
So, yeah, Prop 13 is critical for California, for voters, and for your listeners. Prop 13 really protects the property value when folks buy a home, so it can't be increased at a dramatic increase over time. Right now, the California legislature is looking at turning that back. They're looking at eliminating that Prop 13. They're also looking at eliminating some other possibilities of deductions for a second home. And so home ownership is really under attack in California. The legislature out there, they're not really interested in home ownership. They're interested more in apartment rentals and units and affordable housing. However, what we know through research is that people who own a home have a vested interest in their community. If you have a largely rental market, you don't have as much interest in people in their community, keeping it safe, involved in schools, PTA, etc. So that really plays into what we're talking about, is that the American dream is home ownership, here in Texas, it has, at least from our opinion, me being a Californian, is a state that resonates with those of us who are looking for freedom and a better way of life. I will say, though, I think it would be smart for voters here in Texas, as well as legislators, to look at the model of Prop 13 that was enacted back in California when we were a Republican-led state, because one of the issues that I'm hearing largely about out here is in Texas, certainly we have no state income tax, but, you know, property values and the tax upon that can be pretty considerable depending on the price of a home.
Well, Prop 13 was passed in California through a voter initiative. The entire popular sovereignty came into play and it was passed, and it survived multiple constitutional challenges. And so it is the law of California that property tax is locked in when you buy a home. And the prediction was at the time when it came into being, all these things that you talk about, all this parade of terrible things that have happened to the state, bad schools and what have you, have happened because of the cutoff in tax revenue because of Prop 13.
I wouldn't agree with that. I would say, you know, our prison guards are some of the highest paid and our teachers are some of the highest paid. It's not about money. It's about quality and policy. You know, in California, it's led the nation on legalizing drugs, not just starting with marijuana, but now looking at needle exchange. They've been soft on crime. California laws, AB 109, Prop 47, are letting many people out of prison. There's a real lackadaisical attitude towards these conservative values about what represents a community. There's a lack of accountability and responsibility. Further, I think if Prop 13 were revisited with the voters today, it may have a difficult time winning approval. And I say that because home ownership continues to decrease throughout California. It's no longer affordable. You have a higher rental market. And California really has subsidized any loss that they felt from that by increased taxes. They obviously have a state income tax. As a veteran-owned small business, which I am, in California, I had to pay the state $800 a year just to be a business, not to mention taxes. Out here in Texas, I don't have such a tax for at least the first 5 years, very business-friendly. You're seeing corporations flee California and come to Texas. Toyota is a resounding example here in North Texas. So what we're doing is what Texas has done in attracting businesses. We're now reaching out to families saying, look, businesses are doing this for certain reasons.
Paul Chabot recently launched the company Conservative Move, which is capitalizing on the belief that California is too liberal and conservatives should move to Texas. His website is conservativemove.com. The American economy is changing and clean energy is leading the way. But which state, Texas or California, is better positioned to cash in on this future? Char Miller is a former resident of Texas and now lives in Claremont, California, where he is a professor of environmental analysis at Pomona College. Miller is the author of the book, Not So Golden State, Sustainability Versus the California Dream.
To compare states is often to compare apples and oranges, and particularly these two states, even though they share a lot of qualities, not least of which is fabulous weather most of the time, and large populations, major cities of great significance, and were places that, if we arc back in time, were also part of the Spanish and Mexican society. So, in fact, they, plus Arizona and New Mexico, really are anchored in a kind of history that binds them together far more than some of the, what I would argue are kind of superficial contemporary tensions. It plays well in local areas to say, as Jerry Brown does and Governor Perry used to, but in truth, there's a lot more that connects them than separates the two. But I think if you're thinking about how two states that are such powerhouses contribute to the broader nation, then I think we can start to think about, you know, different choices that places make about how to be more sustainable, more green, and potentially more habitable and just. And I think in that regard, Texas, which is heavily identified, for example, with energy production, oil and gas in particular, and thus fracking, is sort of thought of as an example of the 20th century economy that was really framed around fossil fuels. California, which, by the way, has a very robust oil and gas sector itself, has also made the shift to renewables, particularly solar, so much solar that it is now pushed. Two things are happening, one of which is there are more people working in solar than are working in the fossil fuel industry now. And secondly, California alone, like Germany and Europe, generates so much energy off of solar that it's having to dump it elsewhere. So that's successful. But it's also true that Texas, even when I lived there, was not just experimenting, but was racing into renewables, particularly wind, because of the blessings of topography and landscape. And San Antonio, at least as of 2008-09, was generating about 9 to 11% of its energy through wind power. So even though we say the sharp dichotomies, and mostly we mean politically, between the two places, if you start to scratch the surface, they're starting to look pretty similar.
Similar. I mean, people think that California is, has high taxes, high cost of living, impossible to buy a home unless you have an amazing amount of wealth. Texas, you move here, low government interference, conservative values, and also low taxes, and easy to start a business.
Yeah, and I think at one level, of course, all of those things are true. And then you start to ask another set of questions. What do you get for those taxes or those low governments? And for those of a particular mind, to underwrite highways and to underwrite schools and to underwrite public health in the ways that California has historically done is a virtue. And for those in Texas for whom those things are best left to the individual, that poses complications in terms of public health data. So I get the sort of political slash partisan distinctions, and I think in truth they serve as foils to one another. But it does seem to me that if you start to ask the question about green economies, for example, and forget the partisan stuff, even though there's a lot of posturing, it looks really interesting the way in which, Exxon and others are starting to pour money into renewable energies because they're not crazy. They understand that the future lies where California says it does. And so whether it's Texas Capital or New York Capital, I don't really care where the money is coming from, it is pouring into these new economies, and I think those new economies will start to change the states. The politics are obviously quite different until you go to the cities. And if you look at San Antonio, Houston, Austin, and Dallas, and then compare them to San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Sacramento, they're all managed by Democrats. So the big urban centers are not unlike Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Chicago. And the rural areas in California tend to be more conservative, as do the rural areas of Texas. So we may actually be talking not about states so much, but geography. That is to say, where do you live and how does that then shape the political language that you find most comfortable?
But there are Californians voting with their feet. They are leaving the state, and many of them do come to Texas.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And, you can see it in terms of industry. For example, the dairy industry is not left California by and large, but it is moving not to Texas, but actually to Arizona. But what also strikes me about that is the power of California's economy, now the sixth, maybe seventh largest in the world. Guess where they sell the milk that they grow in Arizona but to California? Guess where they absorb a lot of the energy and other issues? We're looking at a nation for whom boundaries economically don't exist. And so for a company or a set of individuals, they may well make a move to a place where they'll pay lower taxes, but they will also get fewer services. And yet what their economy depends upon and what their particular industry may ultimately rely on are those very same consumers in California. So, to really think about these boundary lines as hard and fast and not to see what rolls up and down – I-10 on the one hand and the rail lines that parallel it on the other is to miss what I think is a much larger story, which is the interconnection between these places that are really reflected. Just drive I-10 from San Antonio to California, which my wife and I did in 2007 when we moved out here. And, you know, the story that you see is of the railroads and the rail cars rolling east, coming out of the Long Beach and L.A. ports, and the goods and services that are flowing back and forth on the 18-wheelers. So from my mind, what we're looking at is the Republican action and not necessarily two states in competition.
They are in competition, though. Maybe it's a political competition, and they are competing also for job headquarters. You know, Toyota left California, moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. People saw that as a tremendous victory for Texas. I mean, there is a competition.
Well, no, there is a competition, and I think it's an intriguing one in the same ways that other corporations have left Texas to go elsewhere and not out here. But the long view and I think the wide angle lens suggests that those competitions are overwrought. Because, you know, Seattle lost Boeing, but I don't think that Seattle has lost. It's actually exploded once Boeing left. An old economy disappeared to Chicago, and new economies took its place. So if we only see this as zero-sum games, we're really missing the point, which is, fine, let them go. New things will emerge. And it's not like California has lost its robust economy. In fact, it's roaring at the moment, despite the fact that some companies, some ag industries, have left.
The California economy is roaring, and Texas, not so much. And people say that's due to the oil industry, the price of oil, not doing well. It's fallen.
Yeah.
Oil experts who say we have seen the end of expensive oil, that this may be right about where oil is going to settle in the just under $50 a barrel area. Of course,
right.
These guys are historically wrong, but
if
they're right this time, the Texas economy is going to have a hard time reclaiming that top spot.
Yes, all of that I think is true. You know, you watch the Eagle Ford play, the fracking and the like that just blew up in every sense of that word for South Texas, in both beneficial ways and not so beneficial. And you look at the long-term dips and rises of the industry. When I lived in San Antonio over the 26 years that I lived there, the boom and busts that rippled through Houston, not so much in San Antonio, but certainly in Houston, you could almost time it. Every 8 to 9 years, there would be either a peak or a valley, and then Houston would come powering back. And the other thing I would say about the industry and more to the point about Texas is that if you're a risk taker, an entrepreneurial risk taker, I wouldn't bet on fossil fuels. I'd be betting on other things. But I would also bet on that sort of capacity that entrepreneurs seem to be born with that leads them to jump at new ideas and the like. And, Houston and San Antonio and Austin and Dallas are just too vibrant of places not to develop new startups that will take off in different directions in exactly the same way that the Bay Area has been sort of schooling the world as to how you build seemingly nothing into enormous capital and then spin it off in different directions to produce new jobs and new work in really exciting ways.
Char Miller is a professor of environmental analysis at Pomona College. Miller is the author of the book Not So Golden State, Sustainability versus the California Dream. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also comment directly on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.